you love reading or do you love books? To be a bibliophile is in part to love that tangible, dead trees be damned packaging of language and ideas. But ineluctably, we are all slouching towards digital. For instance, Anne Kirshner. She is a PhD in English and began as a lecturer in Victorian literature at Princeton University and is currently a dean at the City University of New York. Hers has been a life steeped in books, which makes her experiment all the more intriguing.
Everything in Marseille and about Marseille had stared at the fervid sky and been stared at in return, until a staring habit had become universal there. Strangers were stared out of countenance by staring white houses, staring white walls, staring white streets, staring tracts of arid road, staring hills from which verdure was burnt away.
Kirshner set out to read the Charles Dickens classic Little Dorrit four ways, as a paperback, an audiobook, on her Kindle, and on her iPhone. She joins me, Anne. Welcome to On the Media.
Thank you very much.
So, first of all, you are the one who asked yourself the question I started with, do I love books or do I love reading?
Well, I'd noticed over the last couple of years that when I talked about other formats like audiobooks, people sort of looked at me, you know, weirdly, as if somehow I didn't love books as much as they did. And I realized that there's really a difference between books and reading, and that in the final analysis, it's reading that I love.
So your book group suggested Little Dorrit. You thought it was a great idea because it teems with characters and situations and has relevance to the current time. Let's begin with the basic formats. You started with your old copy of Little Dorrit, I guess, from grad school.
Yes, well, it was right there waiting for me.
And you're a book person, so obviously you're bringing some bias into this little experiment, aren't you? Doesn't this skew the test results, however unscientific they may be?
Well, I really didn't set out to be scientific. I really set out to be practical. We don't read, or at least I don't read, with the same leisure time that I did as a graduate student when I could spend hours and hours reading a Victorian novel. I was facing 1,000 pages of reading that had to be crammed in with a day job and family responsibilities and other leisure time activities. And so given the multitasking reading environment that I have now, how would I best read? That was really the question.
So let's begin with the baseline, reading Little Dorrit as a book.
So I go to the shelf, and there's my orange penguin paperback waiting for me, and I open it up. And the first thing that just washed over me was nostalgia, because there was my name and the date and my little marginalia that I had written as a graduate student. So it was like encountering myself as well as encountering Dickens. The paperback felt absolutely wonderful in my hands. But then I left my apartment and went down into the New York City subway. And in a crowded New York City subway, it's a little hard to maneuver that paperback. And so I started thinking, well, maybe I should look at the audiobook, Little Dorrit, as well, because I'm an audiobook lover.
Aha. Uh-huh. You are an audiobook lover, and yet many will dismiss this way of reading as not really reading at all.
Oh, I think that's an ideological falsity. It's reading. It's just reading in a different format. When you read an audiobook, it's like being read to as you were a child, and you're sort of at the mercy of the narrator. It's at its best a great theatrical performance, but you can't control it. You can't easily go back. You can't easily go forward. So you're a relatively passive reader, but it lends itself to reading in all kinds of unusual places.
And I think you observed at one point that this wasn't a brilliant performance of Little Dorrit. It wasn't like Jim Dale reading the Harry Potter books, but it sufficed.
It sufficed. And if I did a pie chart of all of the hours that I spent reading Little Dorrit, I bet I spent more hours listening than I did to any of the other formats. And that, I think, is because of the flexibility of an audiobook. You know, you're having your teeth cleaned. Great time to read an audiobook. You're putting your makeup on. When I'm traveling on business, I set my iPhone for a 30-minute countdown, and usually I'm asleep by the end of the 30 minutes.
Well, let's wait on the iPhone and skip over to the Kindle, which I understood you received as a gift more than a year ago. Did that change the way you took in the story, absorb the words?
You know, I think that reading electronically isn't as different as one might think. The text on the page is still the text as you saw it in the book, and you have a lot more control. If you want to make the font larger, you can. If you want to play with the margins, you can. What I didn't like about the Kindle was that I had to make a conscious decision to take it with me.
Mm-hmm. I have a friend who said she likes it better than a book because turning the virtual page is so instantaneous and effortless that she felt like a rat in a Skinner box pushing for a pellet, another pellet, another pellet, in a good way.
Then she ought to try the iPhone, because one of the areas that I actually find annoying about the Kindle is that little click, 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 because there's a nanosecond when the screen goes black. And I found that that really sort of disturbed my sense of seamless reading.
Ah, the iPhone, which seems on the face of it to offer the least enjoyable experience because the screen is so small. And yet I have a friend who reads Jane Austen on hers. Hi, Lynn. Is she weird?
She's not weird at all. Go, Lynn. The iPhone was the revelation to me. The screen is brighter, crisper. You can change pages instantaneously. But the most important thing is that the iPhone is always with you, or at least always with me. And, you know, the old Woody Allen line, 70% of success in life is just showing up. The iPhone showed up, and I didn't have to make a conscious decision to take another unit with me, another set of plugs. That made all the difference in the world.
But I wonder how that relates to reading in bed or in your living room. My friend reads her Jane Austen on her iPhone in bed. Would you choose to do that?
No, I would not. That's where good old-fashioned books really shine. But I think if Dickens were alive today, he'd be saying, let's experiment with all of these formats.
I think if Dickens were alive today, he'd probably say, I don't care as long as I'm paid.
Well, you're absolutely right. And of course, Dickens performed his books. You know, he loved the audiobook format because he stood in front of a stage and brought people to tears reading his books.
Boy, don't you wish audiobooks were around when Dickens was reading his?
Oh, can you imagine to have a recording of Dickens reading Little Dorrit? Oh, it would be quite amazing.
Anne, thank you very much.
Thank you. Pleasure to talk to you.
Anne Kirshner, an avowed lifelong reader, is University Dean of Macaulay Honors College at the City University of New York, and she's author of Sally's Gift.
That's it for this week's show. On the Media was produced by Jamie York, Mike Vuolo, Mark Phillips, Nazanin Rafsanjani, Michael Bernstein, and PJ Vogt, with more help from Sarah Fidelibus, Kasia Glodke, and Ethan Cheel. Ethan, thank you so much for all your hard work. Have a great time at school. OTM is edited by Brooke. We had technical direction from Jennifer Munson and more engineering help from Zach Marsh. Our webmaster is Amy Pearl.
Katya Rogers is our senior producer and John Keefe, our executive producer. Bassist composer Ben Allison wrote our theme. You can listen to the program and find free transcripts at onthemedia.org. You can also post comments there or email us at onthemedia@wnyc.org. This is On the Media from WNYC. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield.
Support for On the Media comes from the Ford Foundation, the Jane Marcher Foundation, the Overbrook Foundation, and the listeners of WNYC Radio. This is NPR.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.